Home is more important today than it's ever been. So if you're looking for the right place or trying to take advantage of those low interest rates with a refi, you should know that there's a nationally recognized mortgage originator right here in the Triad. Ashley McKenzie Sharp with Fairway Independent Mortgage Corporation has been included in the top 200 loan originators in the country for 8 consecutive years. Providing personal service with experience, speed, and satisfaction is her number one priority. Trust Ashley to provide you with everything you need for a simple, rewarding home loan experience. And as a sponsor of the Triad Podcast Network, if you text or call Ashley at 336-575-9448 for your mortgage quote today, just mention the podcast, and upon receiving your quote, we'll send you a $25 local business gift card. 336-575-9448 to reach Ashley McKenzie Sharp with Fairway Independent Mortgage Corporation. Ashley McKenzie Sharp, NMLS ID number 100776, is a licensed mortgage originator in North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Florida. Fairway Independent Mortgage Corporation, NMLS ID number 2289, is an equal housing lender. This is the Best Health Podcast, brought to you by Wake Forest Baptist Health in partnership with MedCost.
Good day, everyone. Welcome back to the latest episode of the Best Health Podcast, brought to you by Wake Forest Baptist Health. I hope everyone out there listening today is continuing to be well and be safe. We are still working through this COVID-19 pandemic. News and updates are coming in every day, it seems like, and we're at the stage now where we have a vaccine and the vaccine has entered the marketplace, and we're going to be talking a lot more about that today. Before we get started, I just want to mention very quickly, as I do with most of our COVID podcasts, everyone listening out there can go to the Wake Health website and check out the latest information about COVID and the COVID vaccine, any new developments or visitor updates or clinic updates. All that information is available at wakehealth.edu/coronavirus. For additional information specifically regarding a vaccine and vaccine appointment, if you fit within the current state guidelines, you can also call 336-70-COVID. Speaking of vaccine, we're going to dive into all the ins and outs of the COVID-19 vaccine and get the latest information from two of the best resources we have here at Wake Forest Baptist. That's Dr. John Sanders and Dr. Larry Givner. Dr. Sanders is chief of the adult infectious disease section here at Wake Forest Baptist. And Dr. Givner is professor and pediatric infectious disease provider here within Wake Forest Baptist Health. So gentlemen, thank you so much. Welcome.
Thanks, Justin. It's great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, appreciate you all taking the time. I know you two are probably, two of maybe the busiest physicians we have here on campus right now. I know there's so much information coming in and we seemingly get updates every few hours with this or that. And we hear news nationally, regionally, locally about vaccine updates. So I think you all and your professional background and expertise are going to provide a lot of good, solid information that people can carry with them. So before we get into the details about the COVID vaccine, I want to hear a little bit about the background of both of you all. So Dr. Sanders, if you wouldn't mind starting off, just tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and how you ended up being an infectious disease doctor.
Thanks, Justin. I'm an internal medicine specialist, infectious disease subspecialist, and I've been here at Wake Forest for almost 6 years. And I think one of the reasons that I went into infectious disease was that I was in the military. I was a military infectious disease doctor, and it was just a great, exciting field, trying to prepare our systems and prepare individuals to prevent and treat these infections. I did a career in the military before I came here that was, ironically, a lot of my effort in the military was focused on detecting new emerging infections and working on vaccines to deal with that. I say ironically, because you would think after a couple of decades of doing that, I would have been better prepared and more successful at this point, but it is what it is. We'll keep working.
Thanks so much, Dr. Sanders. What branch were you in?
So I was a Navy officer. I was in the Navy, I would say that within the infectious disease world in the military, they're very much linked together. So I was I did a lot of time in Army hospitals and Air Force labs, and there was a lot of sharing of activity.
There you go. I was hoping you were going to say Air Force. My parents were in the Air Force, but we'll take the Navy as well. It's pretty good. They have great uniforms for the Army-Navy game every year, I'll tell you that. Dr. Gibner, your turn, sir. If you wouldn't mind telling us a little about yourself and about your background as well.
Sure, thanks. I did 4 years of training in general pediatrics and found that the things I was most interested in and the things I was writing articles about, we're all concerned with infectious diseases, pediatric infectious diseases. So it was a logical step for me. I went to Texas Children's Hospital and spent 3 years there training in pediatric infectious diseases. And then came here in 1985 to join the faculty. And I've been here since then, just a few more years longer than John Sanders.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, thank you once again, both of you. And we're going to jump into it now. Dr. Sanders, I want to touch base with you on this first question. And I want you to just to help, you know, people listening have a wide, diverse background within maybe understanding the ins and outs of medicine and some of us not understanding as much about the inner workings of the field of medicine and specifically within infectious disease and vaccines. So as we're talking about the COVID-19 vaccine today, maybe help us just to lay a really base level groundwork of telling us how a vaccine in general works, specifically maybe the one how the COVID-19 vaccine is structured. You know, the needle goes into our arm and the vaccine enters into our body, and from there what happens?
Whenever we get infected, whenever a new germ enters our body, our immune system recognizes it and develops a plan of attack and develops memory to be able to recognize it even better the second time and be able to fight it off even more effectively and more efficiently if it ever sees it again. And so a vaccine takes advantage of that by, instead of infecting us, giving us something that looks like a germ. It can either be a dead germ, a virus or a bacteria that's been killed, or it can be part of a germ or a really weakened germ. For COVID, there are two vaccines that have been given FDA emergency use authorization so far. So two that have been approved and are being put out. Mm-hmm. And then there are a number of others that are in trials and look very promising and are coming out. And each of these vaccines has a different approach. And so I'll talk about the two that are out right now. Mm-hmm. But don't be surprised in another couple of weeks, couple of months, if we don't have new vaccines that are coming out that use a slightly different strategy.
Okay.
The two that we have right now are the Pfizer vaccine and the Moderna vaccine. Mm-hmm. And both of these are really cool vaccines. I could not be more excited about just this this novel technology. They use messenger RNA, which is part of, it's everybody remembering back to high school biology remembers that's part of the way that in the human body, but in every animal and bacteria's body, DNA is copied over into some messenger RNA that tells the cell how to make a protein.
Yep.
And so in this case, Pfizer and Moderna have taken some messenger RNA, mm-hmm. and coded it for the spike protein, that little stick that's coming off the ball of the virus. When we think about the pictures that we see of the coronavirus, the COVID-19 virus, mm-hmm. it has all those little, it's a ball with a bunch of little spikes sticking off of it. Mm-hmm. And so what they've done is taken messenger RNA that has the code, the recipe for telling a cell how to make a protein that looks like that spike.
Okay.
And they've taken that messenger RNA and they've wrapped it in a lipid nanoparticle. It just means that they've protected it with a little shell of fat, so that the messenger RNA, which is pretty fragile, survives long enough to get into our cell. And the type of cells that it, after the needle goes in our arm and it's injected, the type of cells that it typically goes into are designed for picking up germs, cells like macrophages. So they will grab hold of this lipid nanoparticle, and then the messenger RNA is read by the cell, and it produces this protein, this spike protein, mm-hmm. and then the macrophage shows the spike protein to other white blood cells, other parts of the immune system, and says, this is what we are preparing for. This is what we're on the lookout for. So make antibodies against this, prepare white blood cells to recognize this if it gets in naturally. And okay. both the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccine work very, very similar using that approach.
Okay, that's very interesting. So it's literally a messenger. So it's telling the other white blood cells, prepare for battle if you see this come into the body again. Is that accurate?
That's exactly right.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Dr. Givner, I want to follow up on that. I probably can't imagine how much infectious disease and vaccine technology, how far it's come in the last 30, 40 years. And I'm sure the different methods have changed over the years. And, you know, when the vaccines first started, maybe getting ready to come out, there were people, you see some chatter on social media, maybe like, I'm not going to let them inject COVID into me for that vaccine to, you know. So I want to follow and get a very clear answer. Is COVID-19 a live vaccine where you are injecting some sort of form of COVID-19 into someone or no?
No, absolutely not. It is not a live viral vaccine. It's as Dr. Sanders described. It cannot cause disease. It's not a live viral vaccine, so it cannot cause COVID. It also cannot spread COVID because the person who receives the vaccine will not develop COVID, so they can't spread it.
Gotcha.
We do not give live viral vaccines to pregnant women. They don't get the chickenpox vaccine. They don't get the measles and mumps rubella vaccine because they are live viral vaccines. This one is not. So it is recommended that pregnant women, as well as breastfeeding women, receive the vaccine. And for those who are breastfeeding, it may be that some of the antibody will be excreted in their breast milk, and it may give some benefit and protection to the child. Don't know that, but that may be occurring.
Okay. Very, very good, clear answer to that question for everyone listening. It is not a live vaccine, according to Dr. Givner. And I will take that to the bank. Dr. Sanders, you mentioned there is two on the market right now, Moderna and Pfizer. Are there actual chemical or molecular differences in these vaccines? Should I try and be holding out for one versus the other or just take the first available?
Well, I'm sure if you were a patent attorney that you would say, oh, yes, there's lots of differences. Each of them have some patents. But for a physician, for an immunologist, for a patient, there's really not a whole lot of difference in how good they are. They're both fantastic. We really just haven't seen a significant difference one or the other. I have to say that I was part of the Moderna vaccine trial here. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of hoping that I would get the Moderna vaccine. But as soon as Dr. Givner offered me the Pfizer vaccine, I jumped on taking it because it really is, they are so close together. There are very, very few differences in the two of them. The differences that we know right now, one, Pfizer set up their trial to test down to 16 years old to start with. So it's approved for 16 and above. Moderna is only approved right now for 18 and above. Pfizer gives their shot. They're both two shot series. Mm-hmm. Pfizer does theirs at day zero and then 3 weeks later, day 21. Okay. And Moderna does theirs at day zero and then 4 weeks later at day 28. The thing that gets a lot of publicity is just the storage. Pfizer has to be stored at minus 70 degrees. It's really ultra low temperature. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you thaw it, it's only good for a couple of days after it's after you've taken it out of minus 70. You've got to use it quickly. Okay. Whereas Moderna can be transported still very cold and stored at minus 70, but it can be transported at minus 20. And when it gets thawed, it can be good for up to a month. We have a little bit more latitude in getting the Moderna vaccine out to rural places or smaller places that don't have those ultra cold minus 70 freezers as readily available.
Gotcha. That's helpful to understand the difference. And really if my doctor calls me and says, hey, we have the vaccine ready. I shouldn't care which one it is. Just jump on it.
That's right. And Justin, can I follow up on one more thing before I forget to make this point?
Yeah, please do.
You know, I am super excited about this technology, and I called it a novel technology, and it is this messenger RNA vaccine. You know, quite frankly, maybe Dr. Givner expected these to work so well. I have to admit that I didn't expect them to work this well. But I don't want to give people the impression that they were just invented this year.
Right.
Scientists have been working on messenger RNA vaccines for decades. And we had already seen, there had already been human trials in influenza and Ebola and other infections using messenger RNA. In fact, as I keep reminding Dr. Rosenthal, the chair of medicine, the last grand round speaker that I brought in to speak to the entire Department of Medicine was from NIH about messenger RNA vaccines and how NIH was ready to go if there was an emerging infection, a new virus, that they were feeling really confident about this technology. They thought they had gotten it all figured out. That was about 6 or 8 months before we heard about COVID-19. So okay. NIH has been preparing for this for decades. CDC has been preparing for this for decades. And this, while we're really excited about this technology, and it is new in the sense that we did not have any approved vaccines using this technology, it's not brand new in terms of these are the first experiments. This is building on lots and lots of great work that went before this.
Gotcha. That's an important point. I'm glad you made it. That's very good information to put in our back pocket. I guess following up on that, Dr. Givner, to use Dr. Sanders' words, a really cool technology. How effective is the COVID vaccine? As a doctor, would you recommend, you know, just kind of waiting it out to see, you know, I guess with the more people that get it each day, the closer we are to quote unquote herd immunity naturally. So should someone bother getting the vaccine or should they just kind of depend on natural herd immunity to take place? Talk to us a little bit about how effective it is.
Let me, if I can, first follow up on something Dr. Sanders said, because it is a very common question. How did this vaccine get produced and recommended for use by the FDA so quickly? That's a very common question. They want to know, well, does that mean it's safe or unsafe? And as Dr. Sanders said, in part, the mRNA technology has been worked on for a long, long time. So although it's relatively new technology in people's minds, it's been worked on for a long time. Number two is the pharmaceutical companies work 24/7 to get this vaccine manufactured. So they hadn't done that for any vaccine before. And number three is, unfortunately, there's so much disease out there that it was relatively short period of time until they could show that the vaccine was efficacious. If there was less disease out there, more rare disease, it would have taken a lot more time to show that the vaccine was in fact efficacious. So yeah, it was, it came along relatively quickly in a shorter period of time than most vaccines do, but it's been studied in tens of thousands of people, and it is a very, very safe and effective vaccine. And what I do want to give Dr. Sanders and his group a lot of credit for being part of the Moderna study. It was a very complex study, moved very, very quickly in terms of getting everything set in place to be part of the study. And we were happy that our institution and people here were able to be part of that study. So I really want to give Dr. Sanders and his group a lot of credit for that. So back to the question that you had asked me, what about natural immunity as opposed to getting the vaccine? I think the two go hand in hand. Natural immunity, that is getting the disease, may prevent you from getting disease again for some period of time. We don't know how long. And in fact, there are second episodes of disease being reported in those who had a first episode. So we don't know how well protected you are. We don't know for how long. So the vaccination, even if you've had the disease, gives you another layer of protection. So if you've been, if you've had disease, COVID disease, I strongly recommend that you still be vaccinated. It's just an extra layer that may protect you from getting disease.
All right. If you're enjoying this podcast, then I hope you'll take just a quick second to hear about the folks that make it all possible. And that's the Ginther Group, a triad real estate team with a vast local knowledge. Don't believe me? Hear it for yourself by listening to their real estate show right here on the Triad Podcast Network. I'm not even in the market, and I don't know what I'd do without an ally like Blake Ginther and the Ginther Group. They've helped me find a plumber, a roofer, and even helped my family save hundreds each month when we refinanced our home. Now imagine how they can help if you are in the market. They can help you get started with an evaluation to list and market your home. So if you're thinking of buying or selling in the Triad, call the Ginther Group at 336-283-8689 or find them online at theginthergroup.com. Now back to the show.
So we've heard this term efficacy. What is that? And, you know, we hear there's certain percentage efficacy. What can you talk to us a little bit about that and just help us clarify that?
Yeah, as Dr. Sanders said, it's been shown to be 95% efficacious, which means that compared to the placebo group and the vaccine group, there's 95% less cases of COVID, which is a really high level of efficacy.
Gotcha.
That's as high as some of our best vaccines that we've had for a long time. In fact, it is as high as our best vaccines. And people developing the vaccine did not really expect it to be that high. They expect it to be somewhat lower because that's a very high goal and one that was not thought would be achieved, but it has been.
That's beneficial information as people are doing the research on the vaccine, definitely. Dr. Sanders, once someone gets the vaccine, how long does it take for the vaccine to take effect till I reach this efficacy point?
Justin, that's a great question, and I should couch it to say, you know, to some degree, we don't know yet. So there's going to be a lot more research, a lot more detail coming out. But based on the information that Pfizer and Moderna have made public, provided to the FDA, have published in the journals, we can look at a couple of time points. One, we know that, you know, after within 7 to 14 days after, so we'll be conservative and say 14 days after your second vaccine, that's when we hit that 95% efficacy that Dr. Givner was talking about. But we know that immunity starts a lot sooner than that. And when we look at the curves between separating the vaccine group and the placebo group, we see those curves starting to separate after the first dose. By about 10 to 14 days after the first dose, you can see that there is already starting to be an effect. Pfizer has released information, you know, pretty conservatively. They've said they looked at their first dose and have estimated about 50% protective efficacy after one dose. But other, you know, other scientists have looked at that same data and said it looks better than 50% to us. And Moderna has similarly looked at their data and said, well, it's somewhere between 50 to 80% after one dose. And again, some scientists not involved in the study have looked at the data and say, oh, we think it could be as good as 80, maybe even 90% effective after several weeks after the first dose. Gotcha. Which raises the question, of course, why do you get the second dose? And it's we often talk about priming the immune system and then boosting the immune system to really get to really solidify that immune response. To get a higher level of immune response, to really train those memory cells so that they respond effectively the next time. And right now, the FDA and CDC say that it's really important that we get both of those doses of for these two vaccines. There's going to be another vaccine coming that's only a one shot vaccine. So I don't want to confuse people in the future when they're hearing this, but for Moderna and Pfizer,
yes,
in January 2021, the recommendation is still very strong that we get both doses to really get that boost effect as well.
Gotcha. So following up on that, Dr. Givner, I'm going to bounce back to you. Okay, so I got my two shots. I primed my immune system. I've boosted my immune system. Looking forward down the pathway of my life, When am I going to need to get another COVID vaccine? Should I plan on it, you know, once a year like the flu shot, or every, you know, 5 to 10 years like tetanus? What's the thinking?
At this point, that's an unknown.
Okay.
We don't know if subsequent booster doses will be needed. If so, how often? That's just an unknown at this point. These studies followed the study patients out for 2 months after the second dose of the vaccine. But there is data that shows that the antibody in the bloodstream lasts a lot longer than that. So we're hoping that the antibody will last a long time and be protective, but we don't know that yet for sure what that length of time will be and whether any boosters will be needed.
Well, thanks for that transparency and honesty, and that I think there that just goes to show there's still a ton of research and data being collected to learn as much as we can about this virus. Dr. Givner, earlier you touched on this, but I think it's such an important point because I see this question so much online on social media. Pregnant and nursing mothers, it's okay to receive the vaccine, Dr. Sanders?
Yes, just like Dr. Givner mentioned earlier, the trials, the studies that were performed did not include pregnant women. And so the FDA approval doesn't specifically talk about pregnant women. But there's no biological reason for us to expect it to be harmful to a pregnant or nursing mother. Quite the contrary. We know that getting COVID when you're pregnant can put you at increased risk. Mm-hmm. And biologically speaking, this vaccine ought to be just as safe in pregnant women as it is in everybody else, and just as effective, we would hope. And so most of the professional societies who have come out and looked at this are strongly recommending that pregnant women be given all the information about the vaccines, be allowed to make their own choice, but that they be offered the vaccine. And I certainly support that wholeheartedly.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Dr. Givner, we're getting ready to move into the myth versus facts lightning round. But before we do, I want to wrap up this Q&A session. Given your expertise within pediatrics, I think you all mentioned that the current two vaccine, the Pfizer Moderna on the market, they're recommended for 16 and 18 and above. What are your thoughts? I have two children myself. What are your thoughts of, down the road with children becoming vaccinated? Do you see that coming to fruition at some point in the future?
I think it will be coming, and they are studying now the vaccine in younger age groups than at least 16 or at least 18 years of age. So I think it will be coming, and I don't see any reason that it shouldn't be efficacious in children as well. I don't know the timing of when it'll be available, but that is coming. Dr. Sanders being involved in the Moderna trial, he may know some about that as well.
Well, they have started down the series of pediatric studies to get that approval. Those are usually referred to as age de-escalation studies. So you start with an otherwise healthy 18-year-old who can make their own decision, and we expect it to work and be safe. And then you say, okay, it worked and was safe in an 18-year-old. Now let's people 12 to 17 enroll. And then once you've done that, then you do a study where you say, now let's look at people 2 to 12. And after that, maybe even younger, 6 months to two, that sort of age de-escalation. So they have started those studies now in the 12 to 17-year-old category. The good news for us is that whereas they enrolled 30,000 adults in the Moderna study and over 40,000 in the Pfizer study, they're really only looking to enroll about 3,000 volunteers. So it hopefully will go quickly. But of course, the bad news is it's always tough to find volunteers nationally, and so it's hard to predict exactly when they'll finish. Not just that first study, but then the series of age de-escalation studies before it would ever get to a point of FDA approval for young children.
Gotcha. Very helpful. All right. So now we're going to move to the myths versus facts lightning round here. And, this is probably people who use the internet or social media have seen a statement along these lines here recently, if they're paying attention to online news about COVID and the COVID vaccine and the comment section of various platforms. And so I want to get it straight from you all, the experts here. Well, I got you on this podcast. You're going to help me clear up a few myths versus facts. First one to Dr. Sanders. You mentioned, this mRNA technology earlier, and when that vaccine goes into my arm, it's going to change my DNA. I've heard that. Is that a myth or a fact?
That is a myth. And I've heard that too. And if I ever said that, my high school biology teacher would roast me. So it just does not work that way in the way DNA communicates with RNA and RNA communicates with the cells to make protein. So it's not going to do that. It's not going to get incorporated into our genes. It is going to get processed to make a protein, but then very quickly the enzymes, the chemicals in our body, messenger RNA is a quick signal and then it goes away. And so messenger RNA will disappear very quickly. After it's given its message and made the protein, then it's not going to be hanging around. I should point out that we hope that some of the other vaccines that are being tested now will be really good and come into the market as well. Mm-hmm. And some of those use DNA instead of RNA for coding the signal. But that DNA doesn't incorporate into our DNA either. It's just processed and goes away. There's no incorporation of that at all.
Fantastic. Thank you. You've heard it. You've heard that from Dr. Sanders. Second question, myth versus fact. Dr. Gibner, I have an autoimmune disorder, so I should not get the COVID-19 vaccine. Is that a myth or a fact?
That's also a myth. Okay. People with underlying disorders should be sure to get the vaccine because people with underlying disorders may be at higher risk for having a severe case of COVID disease. Autoimmune disorders are a common question. Can I get the vaccine if I have an autoimmune disorder? The answer is yes. There's no evidence that the vaccine causes a flare-up or worsens autoimmune disorders. And again, those are also people who may be going on immunosuppressives at some time in the future. Mm-hmm. So anyone with an underlying illness, just like those without it, when they're offered the vaccine, should accept it. That's clearly in their best interest. The only contraindication to getting the vaccine is a previous life-threatening response to receiving the vaccine. So that's the only contraindication, developing a rash or fever or pain in the arm or anything like that. For any vaccine, including your first dose of Pfizer or Moderna, is not any reason to skip the second dose. The contraindication is very limited, as I said, to just one. Life-threatening reaction to any previously received vaccine.
Gotcha. Great information, Dr. Gibner. All right. So I'm going to move on to the next question, or myth versus fact, rather. You know, we've seen this a lot in media or on social media for sure over the last several months. You know, I can appreciate people wanting to understand fully the situation and understand all the facts and take that information in and process it. I think we touched on it earlier, but Dr. Sanders, when we first heard on the news, okay, they're working on a vaccine. Previously, normal time for a vaccine to market from research to study to market is several years, correct?
Right. The previous record was 4 years.
4 years. And so this one shot down real quick. Boom. It's here. They went through the research, the studies. They got the emergency authorization, and it's here. So because it's the fastest one, it came to market so fast compared to other vaccines, it's not as safe. So I'm thinking something's not right here. So is that a myth or a fact? What does the research say?
Well, it's definitely a myth, but I certainly understand why people are concerned. I would like to say, instead of being so concerned, we should just stand in awe. Because the previous record was 4 years. I'm on record on local TV stations back in January saying, yeah, we'll be really lucky if we get one in 2 years. Mm-hmm. I was also saying we'll be lucky if it's better than 60 or 70% effective. They're never going to interview me again. this really is Operation Warp Speed and pushing these vaccines through testing so well. Adhering to such great scientific standards, such great standards of clinical trials activity, really is the moonshot for vaccines. I can't wait to start seeing the documentaries and the movies that are going to be made about the heroes that participated so effectively in leadership all the way down to our volunteers, because this really was incredibly well done. All of these studies have been done using, you know, not just standard practice, but really rigorous, high level, very, very closely monitored. Again, I've been working with the Moderna vaccine here. Mm-hmm. I have seen our external research monitor more on this study than I have for any other study I've ever been participated. They are here combing over our records constantly. Gotcha. It's really been really well done all the way through. So the scientists and regulators at the University of Washington who led all of this deserve just an enormous amount of credit for the great work they've done. It is, as Dr. Givner mentioned, one of the reasons it could go so fast is because there is so much COVID. So it was easy to, you know, once we gave the vaccine and the placebo, we did not have to wait long before people started to get COVID and told us which one was, whether or not the vaccine was working. But they also moved paperwork through very quickly. They really worked 24 hours, 7 days a week, to make sure that we were doing it fast. But at no point in any of that process did they cut corners. Gotcha. They really were rigorous about it. The other thing that I should point out, that this is one of the first times this has ever happened. The only time I can think of, the federal government did make a really, really clever decision as part of Operation Warp Speed. Mm-hmm. They bought the vaccines before they knew whether the vaccines were going to be effective. They didn't wait for the trial to then make a bunch of orders. And so the benefit of that was, once these rigorous studies were finished, once we actually had the data and the FDA said, oh yeah, it works, the vaccine had already been manufactured. It was brilliant. I really applaud all the thinkers in Operation Warp Speed who contributed to that.
Very interesting. So yeah, and I would imagine, you know, there's probably physicians and researchers and scientists from all over the world working on this common goal with COVID, correct, for the vaccine?
Oh yes, this is, I mean, we, you know, the Moderna vaccine is really, you know, we often refer to it as the Moderna National Institutes of Health vaccine. So this small biotech company has been working with the National Institutes of Health for years to develop this. And there are hundreds, thousands of people at both of those institutions who've contributed to this. Pfizer, their very large R&D department, and then their, you know, tremendous regulatory department. AstraZeneca and their vaccine worked very closely with Oxford University. Well, Pfizer worked very closely with a German biotech company, mm-hmm. BioNTech. So there are American academic institutions and government institutions. There are British, there are German. There are a bunch of groups that have contributed significantly to this all around the world.
Gotcha. That's very, very interesting. So as we wrap up, I'm going to give the last question to Dr. Givner, talking about the COVID-19 vaccine. Last myth versus fact. To follow up on how new the vaccine is, since the vaccine is so new, I'm probably going to get some really weird off-the-wall side effects with this. Is that a myth or a fact?
That's a myth. In the trials, there have been no so-called weird side effects. The side effects are, as I think I mentioned, the ones you would expect: pain, swelling, redness of the arm, perhaps in some people, low-grade fever, chills, muscle aches, joint aches, things like that. Those are expected after vaccines. No weird side effects have been seen. None are anticipated. So this is really, really thought to be safe vaccines, both Moderna and Pfizer.
Very, very good. So from the data you've seen, I'm not going to grow an extra toe on my foot or anything, am I?
No, you will not.
Maybe from
and Justin, other. I don't want to jump on Larry's answer, but can I follow up on that? Because I think a lot of people are saying, oh, we don't know enough about the safety of this yet. And, you know, the vast majority of complications from vaccines occur very quickly. We are already well past monitoring through the phase one, phase two, and now these very large, well-done phase three studies, well past any of those safety signals. Now, that does not mean that we won't see an occasional rare event. Mm-hmm. We've now given this to tens of thousands of people, mm-hmm. but there are some events that occur one in a million or one in 100 million mm-hmm. that we're not going to pick up on until we give it to more than a million or more than 100 million people. But those rare events are very, very rare, whereas complications from COVID are very, very common.
Mm-hmm. And I've been impressed, you know, internally so far with the process of, you know, whenever someone gets the vaccine, they are monitored right there for about 15 minutes to make sure there's no immediate real severe adverse reactions, correct?
Yes, you have to sit and be monitored for 15 minutes after each dose.
Okay.
And we're giving the Pfizer vaccine currently. We have Moderna vaccine also, but I've not begun administering it yet. So okay. We're giving the Pfizer vaccine. And there are some people who immediately after receiving the vaccine report a scratchy throat or an increase in heart rate. And those people are watched and they're perfectly fine thereafter. Mm-hmm. So very, very minor things due to the vaccine or not, it's hard to tell. But very safe vaccine, you're monitored for 15 minutes after each dose.
Well, you know, this has been incredibly helpful, I think so. Hopefully people listening to this podcast about the COVID vaccine have found many of the points interesting and helpful from our special guests, Dr. John Sanders and Dr. Larry Gibner here at Wake Forest Baptist Health. And I want to close and I'll let y'all have a closing comment if you have any. I think y'all touched this briefly during the podcast, but I think it's pretty cool as an academic medical center. You know, there's not only the bedside care that is an important mission of this healthcare system, but also the education component through the medical school and the teaching, but also the research and really being a really key third arm of the academic medical center and being able to participate in some really innovative and transformational processes such as this, I think is pretty cool and should not go unnoticed. So thank you all for everything you're doing. You know, for anyone listening that might be on the fence, Dr. Gibner, I'll let you have the last closing comment. What would your parting words be to them if they're contemplating getting this vaccine or not?
Well, I understand people's questions and I hear them commonly, but I would strongly reassure those people, strongly urge them to go ahead and get the vaccine. The things that we've been talking about in terms of problems the vaccine may cause are theoretical. None of the problems that we've discussed have been seen. And clearly, this vaccine is better than spending time in an ICU. Mm. So I really strongly urge people to get it. And I strongly urge people to urge other people to get it. So get the vaccine yourself. Ask others, your family, friends, coworkers to get the vaccine as well. This is the way to the end of the pandemic. This is the light at the end of the tunnel, and this is how we will get out of this.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Dr. Sanders, any closing words or pieces of nuggets of wisdom you would share with someone who thinking about the vaccine or maybe not getting it? And
just, you know, amen, brother. I agree with what Dr. Givner said.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I was talking to one of my relatives. She's over 75. And I received her first dose and was absolutely elated and so happy. And I think she was thinking the same thing that you said, Dr. Gibner, it's part of the ticket towards the end of the pandemic. So she's very much looking forward to getting her second dose here soon. Gentlemen, thank you so much. We're going to wrap up now and I appreciate your time. And I know you probably have important work to get back to. If anyone has any questions, feel free to contact us at behealth@wakehealth.edu if you have questions about this, and we can pass them on to these two gentlemen here regarding the COVID vaccine. Generally speaking, like I mentioned at the top of the podcast, you can get a ton of information at wakehealth.edu/coronavirus, all kinds of interesting and pretty constantly updated pieces of information come through there. So thank you guys so much. I appreciate it, Dr. Sanders, Dr. Gibner. Have a great day.
Thank you. Appreciate the invite to be here.
Yeah, and everyone listening, if you found this helpful or informational, please do share it with a friend or a family member. And until we have our next Best Health podcast episode, please, I encourage everyone to be well.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Best Health Podcast, brought to you by Wake Forest Baptist Health. For more wellness info, check out wakehealth.edu/besthealth and follow us on social media. Wake Forest Baptist Health, care for life.